of beautiful unceded territories. If you're just tuning in, we were talking about Red X happening in November, Red X happening in June, Silent X podcast, Tribe Called Red Show coming up. There's
big
all
show,
sorts
yeah.
of things.
Big show.
Powwow season's coming up. You can, shameless plug, check out in a couple weeks my Powwow episode part two, talking about the men's dances.
Part two, nice.
Part two. Well, we're coming to a little bit of a close. Yeah, a little sequel. I started part one and realized it wasn't enough because I was talking about jingle dress. I was talking about fancy. I was talking about the origins and traditions of women's dances because I was getting stoked for the powwow that just happened on Saturday. But now powwow season's coming up, so I'm going to do a little men's episode.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Are you interested in Indigenous issues? Do you get ticked off with ongoing colonization? Do you have something to say? Or do you want to learn more? We have just the thing. Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective at CITR Radio, Unceded Musqueam Territories. Our show, Unceded Airwaves, airs every Monday from 11 to 12, and we meet from 12 to 1 to plan our upcoming shows. We're interested in content covering various things from film to literature, current day politics, history, whatever you want to talk about, we're into it. Everyone welcome, Indigenous and non-Indigenous.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and you may be watching this on YouTube, on youtube.com/spiritualshow, or listening on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, where we broadcast from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus. Or you might be listening online at CITR.ca, cosmicdimensions.com, empowerradio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network, and wherever you're listening from, thank you for being with us today. And I'm joined with my little co-host, Billy, the Toy Pomeranian. And our guest, more importantly, today is Courtney Armstrong. She is a licensed professional counselor, and she's the author of The Therapeutic Aha and Transforming Traumatic Grief. And with a career spanning more than two decades, she's helped thousands of clients overcome trauma and experience personal transformation. She also offers live and online training to mental health professionals, showing them how to creatively resolve trauma and elicit life-changing results for their clients. So we are joined by Courtney Armstrong, and we're talking today about her latest book, The Therapeutic Aha, 10 strategies for getting your clients unstuck. And just before the show, I was asking Courtney about what the first of all, your audience for this book are counselors and therapists?
Yes. Yes, I'm a licensed professional counselor, and I've been a counselor for 20 years. So I was actually invited to write this book by a publisher after they saw some of my presentations. And so it was written for therapists, but I also wrote the book in a way that really anyone can read it because I wanted to make it user friendly. So anyone really in the helping professions, I think, could get a lot out of it. But even if you're not, I've written it in a way that I think you could still use all of these tools to get unstuck.
Cool. And so life coaches, nurses, anyone who's working with people.
Yes. Yes.
Awesome. And so when you say unstuck, what does it mean to be stuck?
Well, I think, Marie, when I think of it, and when a lot of people think of it, it's when you know that you want to change something, but you just can't get yourself to do it. You know, so let's say, some of the more obvious things, like let's say you want to exercise more, or you want to drink less, or something like that. And you know, like, I know this is irrational, but I can't stop doing it. Or you find yourself reacting to your partner, you know, or getting triggered by something, or having, you know, anxiety that you know is not rational. And yet, even though you can talk to yourself and try to reason through it, it doesn't change how you feel. So there's a good reason for that. And that's really what I'm getting into in the book, like where all of that emotional stuff can be coming from. And what we know now actually fixes it, because talk therapy doesn't really get to the root of it and all of it. And there's actually easier, less painful ways that we can get to the root of it and clear it, so to speak.
Awesome. And I used to be a distress line counselor for a suicide prevention hotline. And when people are considering ending their lives, many times it's because they're in a lot of pain, whether it's physical or emotional, and they're feeling incredibly stuck.
Right.
So what level of stuckness? I mean, that's at the depths of despair, no, very little reason for living.
Right.
And then people who are hiring you, who I would imagine are maybe professionals or people with resources available. So what level of stuckness is this going to help with?
Well, I think it can help anyone from people at that, you know, in levels of despair, which, you know, I've worked with, I do specialize in treating trauma. So a lot of times people have been through really traumatic experiences, particularly traumatic grief, can often struggle with suicidal thoughts. You know, you begin to think, what is the point of living, when, especially when you've been through so much. So I think that people at that level can benefit, up to people who feel like they just have milder issues. The main thing I want to help people understand is to have compassion for themselves and to realize that what we know now is that the emotional part of our brain, the part of the brain that a lot of people refer to as the subconscious, but now we can see it like on a fMRI scans. We know exactly where this part of the brain is, and it's really like, sometimes I'll make a hand model of the brain. Like one of my colleagues, Dan Siegel, describes if you made a fist, and then if you thought of like your wrist as your spinal cord, and this area at the base of your palm, like the base of your skull here where your brainstem is, and the brainstem controls your most basic functions like appetite, sleep, that kind of thing. And then here in the middle where your thumb is, that would be what I'm talking about, is the emotional brain. So it's actually all of this area, not just the part where your thumb is. And the part where your thumb is, we could think of, though, as like the middle part where our fight or flight response can get triggered. And then on top of that, you've got your cortex. And then where these fingers are, you could think of that as being right behind your forehead. And that's your prefrontal cortex. That's your the logical part of your brain. So here's the problem. The emotional brain is programmed to override your rational mind because it's all about your survival. And it thinks like an animal or a small child. So if it gets triggered, if it detects something in the environment that it's had an experience of as being threatening or unsafe, then it's going to cause you to flip your lid, as Dan Siegel said. So, you know, you can just think of it as like, bling, your rational mind goes offline. So the emotional brain controls 95% of what we think, feel, or do at any given moment. And it's coming from places where you don't decide to get upset. It just turns it on. Or it can also turn it on when you get really excited. So it's not all about fear. It can also be like, hey, look at that you know, cute guy or girl and cause you to want to go run up to him or cause you to obsess about a relationship that you know isn't good for you, but the emotional brain somehow got hooked with this person and keeps telling you, go for it, go for it. So what we want to do is we want to get these two parts talking back to each other better. So this part up here, this rational part, it only controls 5% of what you think, feel, and do at any given moment. So if you're trying to reason through it or you're just doing talk therapy, it can help you feel better just that someone's there listening for you, listening to you and supporting you, but that's because that's a felt experience. It's not the talking through it necessarily that's going to change the automatic patterns that we learned a long time ago. And so to change those, we've got to create a new experience that causes that part of the brain to go, oh, I guess I need to update. So I explain it to clients, and in the book, it's like an app got downloaded in your brain years ago, and we've got to update it for 2016. That's all we're doing here. So I'll stop for a moment if you want to ask any questions or get any clarification. But
no, that's fascinating. I'm just thinking about how much of, I went to this event, The Power of Success, with Marcy Shimoff and Brendan Burchard and a bunch of people on Monday. And one of the things they were talking about is how like 95% of our thoughts are the same thoughts we had yesterday and the day before that. And we try so hard with our logical mind, everything that we think we have so much control over our behavior. And yet then we're like, well, why did I just eat that whole pie?
Why? You
know? So it's interesting, and I'm glad that you have a book now with the 10 strategies for getting to those emotional root areas so that you actually can start to make change.
You can. It's easier than you think, but you just have to know how to. So what's that little Pomeranian's name again on your
Billy.
Billy. Okay.
Billy.
So Billy is great. It's good that Billy's here because Billy can be a great example. So if for some reason Billy needed to lose weight, so remember the emotional brain thinks like Billy. So it's intelligent, but it doesn't speak language. So it learns through experiences. So if you said to Billy, you know, I need to pull out this chart and show you how many calories are in these dog treats and these food, and that you can't be eating this, and try to explain it. Now, we know that ain't going to work for Billy. Well, it's not going to work for your emotional brain either, that controls your appetite and your emotions. But if you said to Billy, hey, Billy, want to go for a walk? You know, if you were like, got Billy excited, or you want to try this new food that might be a little healthier, but you infused excitement and you associated it with more positive things, or you made a game out of it, then you've got interest. So we have to kind of trick that part of our mind. And it's not necessarily that we're trying to deceive it or anything like that. It's just we've got to speak in a language it understands. So here's the other piece that I want to share with everybody, is that all emotion is just a request for an action. That's all. It's just trying to get you to do something, because that's the only way that part of your mind knows how to communicate with you, through a feeling, to get you to take an action. So in the book, I talk about, you know, what we've got 7 primary emotional systems. So fear is trying to get you to move away from something that seems threatening. So it's just saying, hey, get away from that thing. Anger is always about wanting something in the world to stop. So if you're feeling angry, it's just because you want something to stop. And so we're wired in the animal kingdom. If you're afraid, you're wired actually to have your heartbeat faster, your breathing get more shallow, but energy and strength go to legs. So you may feel trembling in the legs, you may empty bowel and bladder, but that's actually your body trying to strengthen your legs so you can run faster. So in the human world, you know, if you struggle with social anxiety and you feel weak in the knees, you're not actually weak. It's just your body wants to move. It's saying, hey, get out of here. This doesn't seem like a good idea. And so what we want to do is help retrain that part of the mind or the brain so that it understands that, yes, in the past, I've had some really weird experiences that have made me a little leery about being out socially, but you want to slowly, you want to slowly expose yourself to new events. But before you do that, I think it's better to actually do what I call the recon process. And recon stands for memory reconsolidation. So all of these patterns we learned at some point in our lives, and you may not even be consciously aware of where you learned it specifically, but with this recon pattern, you can figure that out. And what we now know, what neuroscience shows us, is that to change a learned pattern, we can't just, like if you're afraid of spiders, you can't just, you know, get around spiders, like look at pictures of spiders, look at spiders, you know, at the aquarium until you can be around a spider. I mean, that's called exposure. But what the brain learns is that, you know, it seems like when I'm around spiders voluntarily, they're okay. But if one just drops down, yes, you're still going to jump. So what happens with those kinds of techniques, Marie, is we're just creating two pathways that compete for expression. If you want to update the original pathway where you learned a fear, first thing you got to do is you got to just bring up a little bit of that feeling. So let's say it's social anxiety, and you just say, I feel really uncomfortable when I'm in a crowd of people or when I'm at a party. And then you bring it up, and that's step one, recall the feeling of recon. Then E is explore that feeling for where you first remember having it. Like, so I just ask people, when's the first time you can remember feeling like that? Just let your mind kind of float back. And that's actually, they call it the float back technique in some of our therapies. And then you'll probably find a memory connected to that. Well, gosh, I remember in school. So one of my clients, for example, she had terrible social anxiety, and she was a super smart person. She was an artist. She's a graphic designer, very successful in that arena. She's in her 40s, and she's like, I don't know why I just have the social anxiety. She thought it was related to a rape that happened to her in college. So she was she was a victim of a date rape. And so she knew I worked with trauma, so she came to see if we cleared up that traumatic experience, was that going to heal it for her? So we did work on that, and we got her feeling much more secure. Like, I conquered that situation. You know, it was awful at the time, but, you know, I've moved on since then. I won't get into great detail right now on that. But she came back and she said, you know, it's better, but it's not completely gone. And I said, well, follow that feeling again to the first time you can remember having that feeling of being feeling apprehensive and around people. And what came to her was when she was in the third grade and she was playing with some friends. It was autumn and they were rolling around in the leaves. And then suddenly her friends pinned her down and stuffed leaves down her pants and started making fun of her. And it was just like out of nowhere. And when she, that memory, she said she hadn't thought about it probably since she was 8. But when it came to mind, there was this visceral response. She went, oh my gosh, and she began to sob. And she goes, this is so dumb. This is so dumb. This can't be it. This can't be the thing that got the social anxiety started. Well, it was. So step C in recon. So we recall the feeling that you don't want. We explore it back to where you may have learned it. If you can't think of anything specific, it's still going to work. It's still going to be okay. Just move on to step C, which is what we now know, Marie. We've got to pull up the memory, you know, of what happened or the feeling, and then we've got to contrast it with a completely different experience, but a positive experience, before we go back and we're going to retell the story of what happened. But first, I want to get you in a positive place. And so this is the other thing I talk about in my book, How to Change How You Feel about yourself and the issue. So, you know, what we wanted to do is explore that memory and what meaning she attached to it. And the meaning was, you know, I can't trust people that you think are your friends to turn on you at any given moment. Then the date rape didn't help the situation, right? So then I said, well, so let's do this before we get into more of that story. Tell me how you'd like to be feeling, thinking, or responding instead of how it's been. And right now, you don't have to be concerned with how we're going to get you there. Just be like, think about feeling secure, at ease, interested in other people, realizing that you're not learning anything about you in a social situation, but you're learning things about other people. And when you think about that, let's get an image, something in nature or an animal in the wild that would represent your mind working that way, clear, calm, secure, interested in other people, knowing you can leave if you don't like them. You don't have to stay there. what comes to mind? And she says, a cat. And so she wanted to, so here's a quick imagery exercise for all of you guys out there. You think about how you want to be feeling. And then the emotional brain, remember, it thinks like an animal. So you ask your emotional brain basically, well, how would you represent that feeling? Give me an animal. And it'll say, it'll give you one. It'll always be perfect, even if you don't think it makes sense rationally. So she says a cat. And then here's the next thing you do with it. Just imagine the cat. Just feel like you could be the cat and breathe in and slowly exhale. And you do that 3 times so that you're really kind of feeling what you want to be feeling. And then as you get more and more connected to that feeling, then you want to retell the story of what happened. And you do that in step 4, which is O. You observationally retell the story or write it out. You don't have to relive it emotionally. In fact, I don't want you to relive it. And once was enough. This is like you're telling the story, but now you're telling it from this new perspective. Like the cat might tell the story, you know, and I've been doing this process with clients for 10 or more years now, and it works beautifully, and it works rather quickly. The other thing, step five in recon, is we want to keep neutralizing any negative meaning to your cat. So what was going on with this person is that even though rationally she knew, I don't need to be this socially anxious or lack this confidence in social situations, but I can't stop feeling the apprehension. Once she understood where it was coming from, and we gave her the emotional brain, a sense of, here's what we want to feel now. We want to be like a cat, where you can jump in somebody's lap if you want to, but you don't have to hang out with them if you don't like them, you know. I didn't want her necessarily to just feel calm and at ease in any situation. I wanted her to trust her judgment about some things. And I wanted her to be thinking about, you know, I'm just learning about other people. Because nobody can tell me about me. I know me better than anyone else. So that's one example. And what happened for her is just in that one session, her social anxiety remitted almost completely. Because she still wanted to go out and test it in a few situations. But suddenly, it's like we updated that deeper part of her mind. We updated that original pathway where she began to, as she retold the story, realize that her friends were just little immature 8-year-old kids, and they really didn't mean her harm. Even though it felt really freaky, scary, and confusing, she was, for the first time, able to look at it and say, you know, now that I think back about it, I'm beginning to realize they probably didn't mean to scare me like that, and they thought they were being funny. And the other thing I tell people to do is let's finish the story at a new place, because your mind will stop the movie at the worst place of the memory. And she said, well, actually, one of the girls I'm still friends with, and she's like one of my good friends. She is somebody I can trust. And at that moment, it clicked for her emotional brain. Like it went, oh, and that's the aha moment where, like, oh, yeah. That didn't go on and on forever. Now, realize we're not all going to have happy endings, so you don't have to always find some positive spin on the people involved or whatever it was, but you want to at least neutralize the meaning, like that it didn't mean anything about her, at least. So even if she decided, I'm not going to be friends with these girls, I would want to help her realize other people she became friends with that liked her and they didn't do that stuff, or how she empowered herself to get away from that situation. So what the rest of the book is about, Marie, is all the different ways you can do that. So you can use imagery, but I've helped people with music where you make a playlist where you start out with like how memory or the situation, what feelings come up for you now. So it kind of matches the feeling you have. And then you gradually, you only need about 5 or 6 songs, but you gradually move the tempo to how you want to be feeling, thinking, or something. So the reason why music works, again, is because that emotional part of our brain responds to music. It also responds to movement. So other things that you can do, like, I don't know if you've seen it, but you can just do the victory pose or a power pose. And so I've had people, let's retell the story while you're holding the victory pose, because we know it actually reduces your stress hormones and increases testosterone just to hold like a power pose for 2 minutes. You can use play and humor. So sometimes we'll make the story silly, or we'll make fun of the people involved, you know, like I try to help them feel less threatened, even if it was someone who was a sexual perpetrator. I want to flip it around so that you feel empowered and realize, whoa, they were whack. But I found my way through that situation, and that's to my credit. And so sometimes we might play a game like, let's tell the story in different voices, or there's another little game I'll play that I talk about in the book about, you know, it doesn't exist. So I don't want to take up too much time with all the little in and out details, but I want to give you guys a taste of some different things you can do and help that deeper part of your mind begin to embrace a new way of being in the world. So I'm going to stop right there. Cause I know
that. Awesome. I have a question about the observational telling of the story. Yes. Billy really wants to be seen, don't you?
Yeah.
And so, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because are you observing this from a distance, like from watching yourself in a movie, or are you retelling it even though from your first person perspective? So
that's a great question, Marie. And it's really what you feel okay with. Like, I know when I was first trained in treating trauma, we were advised, like, have the client, you know, feel like they're watching it on a movie screen or watching themselves watching it on a movie screen so that you don't relive it. But some people can't do that, or it just feels weird, like, you know, it's too complicated. So if that is, and then some people like that really helps them. If that feels too complicated, just making it smaller, you know, making the picture in your mind smaller or black and white, fuzzy, or further away as you think about it, and think about you're watching it out there, is another way you can do that. But if that even doesn't resonate with you, what I encourage people to do is just let's retell the story. And as you're telling it to me, intend to stay emotionally present here with me, because it's not happening right now. But the emotional brain that we were talking about earlier can confuse what's imagined with what's real. That's why we like movies and stories, and we can get into it. But for this, what we want is for you to know I'm here in 2016 in a pleasant room with someone I like, with someone that, you know, is here to support me, and I'm going to retell that story and describe what happened then, being very clear that it happened in the past. It's not happening right now. That is what helps your brain update that original memory. It's like, because we call it dual awareness. What we want to do to update a memory is to juxtapose what we call a mismatch experience. So it's like, wow, I've never told this story while being fully present and being very clear and intending to remember that it's not happening at this moment and that I survived it. That right there causes that deeper part of the mind that stores those emotional memories to go, oh, this is different. Maybe I need to update this, you know. The other thing about that is, you know, if it's hard to stay present, that's why sometimes, even if you don't want to work with a therapist, a trusted friend or someone can be, because they will hear things that you don't hear, or they'll help you stay present. So that's my job as a therapist. Like if I start to see someone get really angry or start to get really anxious again, we just stop and I say, just get here with me. You're doing a great job. Let's just hang out here for a minute and we might breathe or we might talk about something completely different just to kind of get out of that space for a while. And then we'll come back again, you know, and we can kind of keep doing it like that, like back and forth until you can get through the whole story. What we're really wanting to do is help you change the meaning of that story and what you learned from that event. But we're doing it by, one, creating a new experience where now you're telling that story or you're looking at it from either an empowered place or feeling more competent or feeling just even calm. You know, what I want to get people in touch with is their strengths as they're retelling it. And that's that feeling, it's that felt experience that's going to get your mind to update. So it's not just here. So, you know, for stuff like losing weight, you know, those so-called simple, sometimes those are harder than actually healing a trauma because they're complicated. There's a lot that goes into our relationship with food, but I can talk about this because I've struggled with that throughout my life. And so, but it's good to think about that emotional part of the brain just wants to feel better. Just like Billy, like, oh, you know, I want a treat. And it's not, you're not trying to sabotage yourself or you're not, you know, you don't lack willpower necessarily. It's just the emotional brain remembers what made it feel better in the past. And you don't have to make it that complicated. But what we just have to do now is get your mind to associate some other things with feeling better. You know, story and imagery can work really well for this too, metaphors. So, again, I don't want to go into too much detail and get people overloaded, but one of my clients who actually lost 100 pounds, you know, some of what worked for her is she was getting really angry about some political issues. So she came in one day to our session and we had actually helped her overcome sexual abuse. So she thought, maybe I keep this weight on for protection and all of that. But we had actually worked through a lot of those issues. She's feeling a lot better about herself, feeling good that, you know, I got through that experience and I've been able to go on and do some other things in my life that I'm proud of. But she still, and she lost some weight through that, but she still, you know, couldn't get past a certain hurdle. And one day she came in and she said, I've been watching the news and I'm so angry about some of these political things that are going on. And she was saying, you know, and I meant to go do my exercise, but I just keep getting caught up in the news and then I get upset and then I eat and I'm, you know, just mindlessly eating while I'm watching it. And so we talked about, well, maybe, she said, maybe I should put my treadmill in front of the TV. And I said, well, yeah. But what we did is we flipped it. It's like, what you've got to do maybe is get your mind to realize, like, because the thought of exercise, her emotional brain was like, that sounds boring, you know, and painful. So I said, well, get on that treadmill and you can, like, I'm marching for our freedom. I'm with them because she felt like she was connected to people when she was watching some of these news programs. But we had to get it flipped around into an experience that motivated her. So one of our primary motions is actually, it's called the seeking system, S-E-E-K-I-N-G. And the seeking system is what causes you to get up and go get it. So I had to find something, what's more compelling than, you know, her depression or her pain or her anxiety. You know, you have to find something that's more compelling than the thing where you're feeling stuck. And that in itself will turn on motivation. Now, when you're talking about people who feel suicidal and a lot of despair or hopeless, it's because that seeking system, the emotional brain's actually asking you to withdraw energy from something that isn't working. So hopelessness, despair, and depression show up when we feel like we put a lot of effort into something and it's just not getting us anywhere. And so your emotional brain's trying to be adaptive, and it's actually going to kind of shut down your energy a little or a lot because it's saying, stop doing that. It's not working. But it will feel like your life isn't working. But if you can just figure out, okay, what is my emotional brain trying to get me to realize? What isn't working? Where do I need to withdraw energy? And where can I redirect it? Then that's going to start to help you move out of that. Now, I'm not saying that in itself is going to always fix it, but it can really help you begin to shift, you know, or at least feel differently about the, feel less despair, actually, because you can narrow it down usually to something in your life that didn't feel like it was working. So,
I just want to mention your book again. We're speaking with Courtney Armstrong. She's the author of The Therapeutic Aha, 10 Strategies for Getting Your Clients Unstuck. And even if your client is yourself, you could also read this book. Or, like you were mentioning earlier, friends could do it together. Ideally, it's for therapists, counselors, coaches. But maybe if you're watching this and you are in a bit of a stuck position where you don't have that resource available to you, if you have a friend who's willing to do it, you could both read the book and be there as that observer, like you were saying, when you're recalling it, making sure you're sticking to the facts and not getting into recalling what that meant to you emotionally, right?
Yes, you got it. Because even though we want a felt experience, but we want you to feel what you'd like to feel. Going too deep into retelling that story or reflecting on that memory, the key is just get an idea of, like, how do I want to be feeling about that? And what could help me get there? Is there a certain song that I could play to get me in that state of mind? You know, I've had a client who was in a very abusive relationship, and a song that really helped her was Mary J. Blige's Can't Keep a Good Woman Down, you know. But we danced to it and, like, got her in touch with that feeling before she talked about, you know, some of her experiences. So it's part of what you're trying to do is help that deeper part of your mind get a different perspective through feelings that would, well, you want to evoke the desired feeling before you start going deeper into your pain. And see, we used to do it backwards in therapy. Tell me all about your pain. Let's go deeper and deeper into it and analyze it to death. And then we'll try to figure out how to fix it. Well, what would happen is people just, you know, they just feel worse and worse and worse. So we actually need to start, where do we want to be, you know, when this is done? What would make this worth your while? And let's get you connected to that as much as we can. Now, I realize if somebody comes in really depressed, I'm not going to expect them to get up and dance with me, you know, but I just say, let's just for now, if you can just take one step into the, you know, what would feel better? What would be worth your while? And let's get you just at least into that concept for a moment. It's going to make the rest of this a lot easier. And we're telling your emotional brain where we want it to go. It needs direction. If we just keep rehashing things, it thinks you're reliving it over and over again.
Now, Courtney Armstrong, the author of the book today, The Therapeutic Aha, has a gift, a free gift. So you got to stick around to the end of the hour to hear more about that. But I just want to let you know. So you stick around. And Courtney, I'm curious, you mentioned like the song and bringing up the emotion, feeling better. When you go through this process, the recon process that you're talking about, is that emotion, that more positive emotion, going to be more accessible? Because I find I can get myself, I mean, even people like the event that I went to on Monday, people go to these events, they listen to Tony Robbins, motivational speaker, they get all amped up.
Right.
And they don't do anything about it. Their lives stay mostly the same.
Right.
So I'm curious, is this recon system going to make that different?
Yes. This is a fantastic question. Because what you're talking about, if you just say, I'm just going to get myself in a positive mood, or you do get really, you hear something really inspiring and you think, oh, yeah, I get it. But if you don't make that connection, if you don't connect that feeling to something that made you feel really lousy, the thing that could bring you down, if you don't update that, your mind won't associate the two. It'll say, well, gosh, when I'm around Tony Robbins, you know, or my podcast friends, I feel so inspired. And yet when I'm around this person, I just, you know, I feel awful. I don't like how I react to them. I don't know, how can I be such a positive person here and not here? And it's because you've got to, the emotional brain makes associations. So what you would need to do is say, okay, now that I'm feeling really inspired, what would be, this would be a good time for me to get in touch with what brings me down, what could kill it for me, where could I get stuck, you know, where it would kill my motivation, and understand like where that comes from. And then, so let's see, let me think of an example of that. Okay, so I've got another one. And this is a client where play can work, actually. So he actually was alcoholic. He was, he cut on himself. I mean, he had a lot, he hated himself. And he had a lot of anxiety. And when I asked him, you know, is this related to any trauma? He said, no, I didn't have any trauma. Because most people, when they think of trauma, they think violence, abuse, and he couldn't identify anything. He's in his 30s. And so he loved music. He was really actually very good musician. And so when he was doing that, he said he felt connected to people and like he belonged. But when he wasn't playing music, he felt completely empty. So what we did is, okay, so bring up the feeling where you feel empty when you want to drink or cut on yourself, and let's follow that back to the first time you can remember having that feeling. And he's like, you know, he thought, this is stupid. He thought about it, and then he got this look on his face. He goes, probably when my dad left. And I said, well, what happened? He goes, well, he just left without saying goodbye, anything. So see, it didn't occur to him that was a trauma, you know, but it's like my dad just walked out and left. And his dad didn't completely leave his life. But I said, and what did that mean about your dad that day when that happened? Just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. Because the emotional brain, remember, it doesn't get real analytical. It's just like, well, he didn't care. And what did it mean about you? What did it feel like it meant about you? That's a better way to say it. And he said that I didn't matter. And I said, okay. And he goes, and don't believe in anything, because nothing matters. So all your accomplishments, all this, all that, so don't even put yourself out there, because it doesn't matter. You're just going to get disappointed. And then he was like, I knew I was cynical, but I didn't really know I really felt that way, because, but I really do. I said, okay, so now we need to go back through that event, but we need to go through it differently. So let's come back. Let's stop right there if we go any further, and let's get you back in touch with what you feel when you're playing music. And so, you know, I just had him close his eyes and just bring to mind a song, just, you know, just get into it in your mind, like what that feels like, what, you know, what you see, what you hear, what you feel, what you sense, you know, until he could pull that feeling up again. And then I was like, and when he let me know, and it's like, I'm there, I got it. And I said, okay, so now let's go back through that day and think about younger you, that 10-year-old, and now watch it from an adult perspective. And think about what you'd want him to realize about it that day. Or, you know, think about what you would want to tell him about what's happening. Like, you're going to narrate it for him. And what came to him was, yeah, I'm starting to see, like, you know, I still don't like it. And I still don't like my dad for how he did that. But he didn't believe in anything. That doesn't mean I don't have to believe anything. They still wasn't sure. So we had to kind of go through it. And you can go back and forth. Like, I'm like, be in your music. Why do you believe in that? What makes that meaningful to you? Well, people believe in me. People respond. It does connect us. Okay. Now let's go back into that memory. Take that feeling back into there, you know. And so you can actually kind of weave back and forth. But like you were talking about, Marie, he had to make that connection, like that he could still carry that feeling he wanted, like when he was inspired playing his music, but he had to get his emotional brain to be able to pull that up, you know, in one of his worst moments and get a new perspective and be like, you know what? So the next time that I saw him, I mean, he was significantly better. I mean, what's so cool about it is that hopeless feeling just won't even show up the same way. Because it's like your mind begins to go, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. You know, this isn't true for me anymore. But you know, you've got to find an experience that either a real experience that you've had in your life, or you can even imagine one that will help that emotional brain get a new perspective, feel differently, learn differently, and you've got to make those associations. You know, otherwise, it'll just stay in like two different compartments. So,
interesting. I've actually been in the month of January. I was getting progressively more and more depressed, and thankfully, like going to that event on Monday, sort of shook up my system a little bit. But my concern is that I'm going to go back. I think what the trigger was that like I grew up in poverty and foster care, and my mother was very poor and all of that. Yes. And so finances have been a constant concern. Even as a child, I was like planning, like, how would I take care of myself?
Yeah.
So In over the holidays, my YouTube income, actually, the revenue from ads and all that skyrocketed. And I was like, wow, maybe this is my finally, you know, build up a little bit of financial security. And then as the month of January went on, every day it went down and down and down. And I kept thinking every day, okay, don't, you know, like, yeah, the revenue that you make is not attached to your self-worth. It doesn't mean you're not going to be safe. You know, I tried to rationalize.
Right.
But I thought, surely it's going to stop somewhere, right? And then every day I'd look and it'd be down. And I got lower and lower and lower. And I think that that was the trigger. I'm not for sure, but that's the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering, like, I think I'm going to have to go back in and look at, like, the financial, you know, do the recon that you've suggested.
Yes.
Because all of the material that we talk about on the show and all the self-help people, like, they all talk about, you know, if you have no money in the bank, it doesn't mean you're going to die. It doesn't mean that you should sink into a depression. But yet, if that's where my mind goes.
Right. Of course it does. Based on what you just told me about your background, that alone would be so logical for your emotional brain to be preparing. Because I'm sure as a kid, you may have had experiences where you thought everything's going to be okay, and then it wasn't again. You know, or mom's going to be okay, and then she's not. I got to, you know, and so that part of your mind's learned a pattern, like, don't get too happy because it could happen. And so what you would want to do is something like finish that story where, yes, you know, money can come up and down, you know, jobs can come and go, but recognize where it's what you did to get back on your feet, or the times when you want to help your mind not stop the movie, that's not where the story ends. And even though it's not, so this is the other thing, I know I'm telling everybody to be positive, but I also like being realistic. And your emotional brain's smart. Like, it's not going to buy a bunch of Pollyanna. So, I mean, you have to get real with yourself and go, this isn't my favorite part of life. This isn't pleasant. I don't enjoy it. It's scary. But now I can remember times when, how we made it. Did we get creative? How did I get resourceful? And you're showing your emotional brain, I did resolve it, and I'm continuing to resolve it. And now I have different, even more resources because I'm an adult and I can do a lot more. So yeah, you'd want to reframe the story like that. But you may want to start with getting in touch with a time that you really did bounce back, you know, like really get in touch with the feeling, like, you know, when people started wanting to, you know, when I sold ads for my YouTube site, I mean, that's awesome. You know, when I got this many subscribers, you know, things like that, that are hard to do and you did it. You want to get in touch with those feelings, like when you knew, like, whoa, I did make something happen here.
So just to clarify, because that was my concern, is what if that, if that better thing or making it never came, or was never able to observe that as a kid, you can still go back to a more current, more recent event.
Yes, you go to a recent event. It's like you show, you know, in your mind, you show your younger self, like, this is going to be really hard and it's not going to get better quickly, but you're going to grow up and you're going to, you know, you may still encounter some really freaky, scary stuff, but here's some things that you do that are pretty cool. You know, here's some possibilities, but you've got to, you know, think of something real if possible. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. Like, I've had people just remembering, yes, you know, I was raped as a 6-year-old. And then, you know, I've asked them, and then take me to a time that was better than that, that happened later, you know, when you felt empowered. And this person said, riding a bike. And so just finishing the story with, and that was awful. And later, I avoided that neighbor, and then I was able to ride a bike, and then I could get on my bike, and they couldn't catch me. And just updating it with that, I was like, oh. The emotional brain makes an association, like, oh, yeah, I've got some options here. So for you, it would even be, and I appreciate you so much sharing something personal with us, because that touches my heart just to hear that about you, and makes me admire you even more. And it gives us a real thing, you know, that we can't just sugarcoat things. You know, I think you have to admit, and it was really, really hard, but somehow I keep finding a way to make it, and, you know, and gets a little bit better and a little bit better, and I'm surrounded by more positive people, and we're all rooting for each other, and that's something I didn't have then, you know. So it's like helping your mind, because if I thought about it from the emotional brain's perspective, the depression is like, it's telling you, pull back, conserve your energy, because it's about to get bad again, you know, and you just want to say, it's scary, but this story doesn't end here, you know.
And that makes a lot of sense, the conserving the energy.
Yeah, it's like it's preparing for winter. Like, oh boy, hibernate, because here it comes. We better stock up, you know, like if you're an animal, it's like we better stock up all of our food because we may not get any more for a while. So if you can think of those emotions are really coming from a primitive place that just thinks like an animal, and it's not trying to make you feel bad. It's just thinks it's helping you.
All right. Well, we are starting to run out of time. We're speaking with Courtney Armstrong. She's the author of The Therapeutic Aha, 10 Strategies for Getting Your Clients Unstuck or Yourself. And we I want to ask you about this gift that you have to offer. But before that, is there anything else that you think is really important to get across to listeners and viewers today?
I think the main thing that I want to encourage everybody to recognize is that we're wired to survive, and that we're not wired to sabotage ourselves or be mean to our partners, or, you know, it's about understanding, why would that part of my mind want to, it's all protective stuff usually. Or it thinks it's helping you do something that felt good in the past. So if you can have a little more compassionate understanding and just begin to ask yourself, now what, why would I want to do this or that? Why would that part of my mind want to be doing this? Think like an animal when you're answering that question. I think you can uncover the answers pretty quickly. And they don't have to be that complicated, but you may be surprised at what comes up for you, and that you can heal it. You can update your mind. We know that now, that even if something happened years and years and years ago, or over and over and over again, that part of your brain can change, and it doesn't have to take a long time or a lot of therapy.
Cool. Yeah, we're learning that every time you bring up a memory, it actually changes. Because we think that memories are just hardwired, set in stone. But every time you remember something, it changes slightly. So this is just a way of intentionally changing those memories.
You got it. You nailed it. That's exactly right.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Courtney. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And I love your passion. And you've obviously have a lot of experience working with people in helping them with their traumas. So it's wonderful to hear you speak and share your stories. So what is this gift that people can check out?
Well, on my website, so I've got CourtneyArmstrong.net is one site that's for therapists, but you can go on it. This isn't like exclusive therapists, but I also have CourtneyArmstrongLPC.com, and I have free handout, like downloads. It's walk you through the recon process. So you can get that stuff and work through it yourself. There are, of course, worksheets in the book, but if you want to check it out and play around, I've got one packet. If you, you know, sign up for it, you just get like all the worksheets from the book. You can play around with them and get some ideas. There's more things in the book if you like it and you want to get more ideas for how to help yourself. But, you know, I just want people to have access to resources and get better and live to their full potential.
Wow. So that's awesome. You can go to CourtneyArmstrong.net. And I will post a link to that. If you're watching on YouTube, I'll post a link to her websites in the description. If you're listening on the radio, just go to CourtneyArmstrong.net. And that's awesome. Thank you so much, Courtney, because people watching this and listening to this can actually start today on changing their lives.
Yes, absolutely.
Yay. Thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, just thank you for having me, and thank you for what you're doing and putting this out there in the world. It's helping a lot of people, and you're just a ray of sunshine. So,
thank you. All right. Well, we hope to talk with you again, maybe on your next book. We'll have you back on the show. All right. Well, this has been Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you to Courtney Armstrong for being on. Thank you to Billy the Toy Pomeranian, who has left my lap now. She had other things to do. So thanks for being with us. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe to this channel, like this video, and share it. And if you are listening online or on the radio, you can go to my website, happyshow.ca. Thank you, and sending lots and lots of love. Be well. Namaste.